I find joy in my life.
By reading quietly.
Through laughter. Through exercise.
In my hobby of baking.
With my family and friends.
In being in nature.
In running.
In investing in the relationships that bring my life meaning.
When I can put my toes in the sand and hear the crashing of the waves.
Welcome to Joy of Medicine On Call, where we explore the many paths physicians take to find joy in our practice of medicine. I am your host, Dr. Rajiv Mesquita, and I look forward to your engagement in this exciting program. I also want to remind our listeners that we have a 5-minute meditation segment at the end of the podcast. Please be sure to stay tuned for that. Our guest today is Dr. Melissa Marshall, who serves as the Chief Medical Officer for Communicare Health Centers in Davis. Dr. Marshall actually went to college at Stanford, and then after that attended medical school at University of Washington in St. Louis. She completed her residency in family practice at UC Davis right here in Sacramento, and then spent some time over in St. Louis and then Oregon, as well as the Oakland area, and then has returned back here to Sacramento. She has spent quite some time working in the network she does and is quite accomplished, and we are delighted to welcome her here. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Great. So I'd first like to start off by asking you how you became interested in the topic and the area that you work in now. I know you work in the network clinics, and it's a niche that you got into, but what made you interested in that?
Sure. So I was always an idealist in medical school. I went into medicine really to serve my community, and I started out as a full-spectrum family medicine doctor in Corvallis, Oregon, where I woke up at 5 every morning to check the hospital roster to find out who had been admitted overnight, and I was on call 24/7 delivering babies. I was really a part of the community. We saw everyone. We took Oregon Health Plan, which was the Medicaid provider at that time.
Sure, yeah.
And we even wrote off some care for the uninsured. It was incredibly meaningful work and very exhausting. There was an opportunity for me to return to my hometown to continue to do full-spectrum family medicine, which was my passion. And it turned out it was in a federally qualified health center. I had not really been exposed to health centers or the work that they do in terms of caring for the underserved and caring for communities. Mm-hmm. And when I started work there, I just knew I had landed in the right place.
So there was a critical moment in your life that made you realize you needed to make this transition. Is that right? I mean, you felt...
Well, I would say, you know, when I was in Oregon, being on 24/7 really takes its toll. There isn't a lot of separation between your work life and your family life. I could be at my child's soccer game and have to run back to the hospital. I had patients who found my home number and would call me at home. And, you know, I certainly saw my patients everywhere, and there was something delightful about that. There was something really wonderful about being a part of a community and serving the community in which I lived. But there weren't very clear boundaries, and it was exciting to actually work in an environment where I could have some better boundaries.
Did you ever feel that you were burned out, Melissa? Did you feel that as a physician that it was too much?
Well, I would say, ironically, when I was in Oregon, I didn't feel terribly burnt out, even though it was exhausting. I really loved the work. I knew I couldn't sustain it for the long haul, and that's partially why I made the transition to St. Louis, where I shared call with colleagues. But when I faced a chronic disease, an autoimmune disease, and was continuing to take call and really felt like I wasn't managing my own health very well, that's when I began to feel that I needed to make further changes.
And this, you made those changes and never looked back. It sounds like you...
I never looked back. I actually, you know, it's interesting because I always loved clinical medicine. And then I took sort of a 180 degree job in administration, and I went to work as the chief medical officer for the network of health centers in Alameda County right during the Affordable Care Act. We were a management service organization, so we actually managed all of the Medi-Cal dollars on behalf of the health centers. And it was exciting work. It was policy work. It was program development. It was, you know, contracting and advocating for the underserved. Yeah. But I wasn't doing as much clinical medicine at that time, but I had better balance.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, in this current time, Melissa, physicians feel that there's a lot of stress. They feel the demands are increasing on their lives. And we often hear about burnout in the literature. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you manage a large population of patients as well as a moderate-sized group of doctors, and you've come up with a program to actually help with wellness, something modeled after Naomi Raman. Is that correct? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so what's wonderful is I didn't have to invent it. It was already there. Rachel Naomi Raman, who is the author of Kitchen Table Wisdom, actually developed a program called the Healer's Art Course, which is done in medical schools all across the country, yeah. where groups of medical students would gather together and they would talk about the awe of practice. They would talk about their shadow selves, what they had to give up to do clinical medicine. They would talk about, you know, those holy moments that we experience with other human beings and how we really connect to the work. And, you know, this is a model that's already been in place. And we thought, well, how interesting it would be to actually do this with our own providers, seasoned providers, and not just medical providers, but also we're an integrated, not like Kaiser, but we do have integrated behavioral health. We have dental on site. We have a strong midwifery practice. So what would it look like if we brought all of those providers together and had them sit down around a table and really connect around these really important issues, which bring them to clinical practice and bring them to the healing profession?
What's an example of an issue that they would discuss if they came together?
So one of the examples, again, is the shadow, which is really what we give up in order to do the work. And I think many of us, perhaps, we don't think about this. We don't think about what could have been, what would have been, what things we have to put aside in order to really give ourselves meaningfully to the clinical practice of medicine or to any healing profession. But, you know, some of that is really interesting fodder for conversation.
Sure. So you found that the power of connection was really useful there. Did you find that as physicians and other providers connected, they felt better? Or did you notice anything through that? Or?
Yeah, well, it's sort of interesting because another reason that we decided to do this work was we were becoming more aware of the trauma in our patients' lives. So because we're safety net providers, and probably, you know, Kaiser did the big ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not unique to a safety net population, but certainly we see it quite a bit in the population that we serve. You know, we have patients that have just gone through extraordinary experiences in their lives. And there's a phenomenon called vicarious trauma in which the provider also takes on a little bit of that trauma themselves in trying to manage the trauma of the patient that they're serving. And we had noticed that this was becoming more and more evident. We had behavioral health staff that were actually doing court-mandated visitation for CPS cases, and they were just really taking on that trauma. And so this was an opportunity for providers to actually get together and talk about those experiences instead of being in isolation. We also thought about organizational psychology, where we know that, you know, it's, you know, there are many things that tie us to our work. You know, some are based on social status, some are based on purpose, some are self-realization, but really there is a social connection that people look for when they go to work. And in some ways, we've lost that.
Yeah.
In 2013, The Atlantic published an article called What Happened to the Doctor's Lounge?
Yes.
And we know that, you know, it used to be once upon a time when I was delivering babies on labor and delivery, I'd get together with the nurses and, you know, things were slow because you could never predict.
Yeah.
We could sit around in the nurse's station and chit-chat about our families and really feel a sense of community. Yeah. Or in the doctor's lounge. And we sort of lost that. It's become a place to do paperwork and to catch up and just to be on the hamster wheel. And not really to connect over sort of meaningful issues.
Yeah, that is so true. You know, even 5 years later, that statement, what happened to the doctor's lounge, is very true.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, not every hospital has one.
Right.
And but the power of connecting, you know, when I think about it, it's as healers, we spend a lot of our time taking care of people, but a lot of physicians, you know, leave themselves last. We leave our needs last.
Mm-hmm.
But this opportunity to connect and actually maybe discuss some issues that might be important to you might you've found to be quite useful in at least your experience of what you've done. Melissa, can you tell me more about how you've met that work-life balance? Because that's one of the issues that we all struggle with. I struggle with that all the time, and I know there are physicians out there who are also struggling with that. You know, how do you meet the needs of your patients while at the same time your family, you know, all the other responsibilities that you have while still doing everything you need to do?
Well, it's interesting. I think I've been through many different chapters in my life trying to work this out. There's a great book called Composing a Life, which actually explores the chapters in people's lives in which perhaps something small changes, but their life changes dramatically. I would say for myself, you know, there were times in my life where I probably didn't manage that balance very well. Certainly as a single parent in medical school with three small children, I didn't feel like I had any balance at all. And I didn't feel like I was really present for my family in ways that they needed me. You know, one of the best compliments I ever got on my pediatric rotation as a third-year medical student was that I was the most efficient medical student that that attending had ever seen, because I actually got my work done and I went home at 5 o'clock and went home to prepare dinner for my children. And of course, it had to be pediatrics where that was noted and appreciated. In general, that's not appreciated. I've also been thinking a little bit about, you know, there are lots of books now about happy countries. I don't know if you read any of those.
I have not, but sure, you can tell us.
So in some Scandinavian countries, it's actually thought to be suspect if someone stays late at work, that perhaps there are issues at home, or perhaps they have too much work on the table and something needs to be taken away. And so it's actually evaluated. Why aren't you going home? And, you know, how can we help you do your job more efficiently? I think there's a lot to be said for that, a lot to be said for kind of learning how to put some boundaries around the work and actually go home and have the second part of our lives unfold.
That actually makes a lot of sense, and I can see how that would play a role there. The old way of looking things was that the longer you stay, the more you're working, the better you are. But reframing it so that you're doing really a good job for your patients, but at the same time being there for your family as well. It's interesting to me that your pediatrics rotation was the one that recognized that.
I know.
It's interesting.
I'll never forget that.
That is definitely memorable. Can you tell me about more about how you feel taking time for yourself is important? Is that important, or do you feel that's something that we don't need to pay much attention to?
Well, I think we're all overachievers, and especially those of us in leadership positions, you know, we take our work very seriously. But I've always been one to take vacations. Someone gave me really good advice just about always having the next vacation planned. And I've taken that to heart. So I'm sort of fortunate, and then my husband is Welsh, so we have to go back to Wales every year. We have to take a prolonged vacation.
Mandatory. You have
mandatory.
To do that.
Well, we've got family responsibilities.
Yeah.
And so I've sort of carved that into my life, and it's a wonderful time for me to decompress, because I don't have constant access to emails and phone calls and texts. I'm away with family, and I can enjoy that. But I always have to have the next vacation plan, too. So I'm actually looking forward to going to visit my daughter in Denmark, who's studying there this year.
Yeah. So, that you know, that's really useful advice. So treating the time for yourself almost like you would treat something else. You're saying you should schedule that in.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it's something that you actually do. Are there any other tips or advice you would offer for physicians out there who are looking for some of the ways to introduce balance into their lives?
Well, I think some of the moms in practice that I've known have already know this. They've got that hard stop at 6 o'clock where they have to go pick up their kids, or they're going to get charged, I don't know, $20 a minute. The hard stop is really nice, actually, to have a hard stop. I was always someone that had to clean my desk off every day. I had to finish all the tasks. I had to wipe my emails clean. But sometimes having a hard stop is really helpful. And right now in my life, although I'm sitting here with you after hours, I generally try to go home and have dinner with my husband. And if I have more work to pick up later, I may do it. But I have a hard stop, and that hard stop means that I'm going home to my family.
Sure, sure. And that makes perfect sense, then prioritizing. let me know if we're reaching a hard stop. We'll let you go home. So Melissa, I'm going to ask you a few questions here, and this is part of our lightning questions, and just let me know what comes to mind. First, reflect on something that brought you joy in the last week.
Oh, you know, it's usually my children. My children are young adults, and it's always nice when they send me photos or communicate with me spontaneously.
Sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's wonderful. What is the best advice you ever received?
The best advice I ever received? Oh, I could think of 100 things. The first thing that comes to mind is don't take yourself too seriously. Life is a journey, and we're going to make some mistakes, and we have to approach things with humility.
Just be kind to yourself. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's good advice. What is a book you can recommend that helped you find joy?
Well, I am somewhat of a ferocious reader, and it would be hard for me to name every book that gave me joy. I also love short stories, and I love poetry. And I find that poetry gives me a tremendous amount of joy. But I'll just comment on a book I just recently read, which was The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And it is a medical book. It's nonfiction. But I found it tremendously compelling and fascinating on a number of levels, both in terms of, you know, the history of this African-American woman's life and her family, and how that intersected with medicine and, you know, all of the health disparities and racial inequities that occurred. It's just a really great read. So I highly recommend it.
Wonderful book. Mm-hmm. Who is someone you admire?
Oh, I admire so many people. Right now with politics being as it is, I admire the champions that we have in office that are steadfast and true. A few come to mind. I would say Cory Booker is mm-hmm. one of my heroes, mm-hmm. Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. and Elizabeth Warren. All three, I would be happy if they ran for president.
Wonderful. Melissa, what are you most grateful for?
Well, I think we all have to be most grateful for our health, because without our health, we can't be doing this important work. But, you know, I also really reflect quite a bit on gratitude, and I think that's a really important exercise for those of us that are struggling to keep balance and to continue to find meaning every day. And I'm grateful every day when I wake up to have purpose, to have meaning, to have abundance in my life, and to have that shared with people that I love.
Thank you. How do you take time for yourself, Melissa?
I think I shared with you that I really try to deliberately schedule it. Mm-hmm. And I tend to be an introvert, and I will tell my husband that I need to go manage my introvert. A busy day at work, we know, is interacting with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of extrovert energy. Mm-hmm. And there are times when it's really lovely just to steal away and read a book or work in the garden or sure. take my dog for a hike.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And the final question, Melissa, what is a step listeners can take in the next 24 hours to find joy?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. One is to really consider what you are grateful for. What parts of your work give you meaning? And are there parts that are missing that you need to search for in other ways and other aspects of your life? To think about the connections that people have, whether it's at home or at work, but to try to make those stronger. I think those are meaningful things that we can do to keep going forward.
Thank you. I'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Melissa Marshall, for just a wonderful evening here with such great advice for all of us. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin mindful eating. Find a piece of fruit that you have close by. It could be a blueberry, a strawberry, or a piece of a peach. even a raisin would work just as well. Sit comfortably. Adjust your posture with the fruit on a plate in front of you. Go ahead and gaze at the fruit. Notice the texture, the color. Is the light shining off it in certain ways? Also, draw your attention to the area around it. Is there any liquid? Is it dry? Gently pick up the fruit as you examine it. Does it feel rough? Is it soft? Is it hard? Imagine it in your mind where it might have come from. Maybe grown in a field somewhere, plucked by someone, and then transported to where you are. Gently roll the piece of fruit in your hand. Bring it close to your nostrils as you smell it. What sort of a scent does it have? Is it strong and powerful, or is it mild? Draw attention to your mouth. Maybe you start to feel saliva building up in anticipation. Bring the fruit closer towards your mouth and go ahead and put it in your mouth. Don't chew on it yet. What are the sensations you feel as you roll it in your mouth? Is it rough? Is it smooth? Go ahead and start chewing on it as you bite down. Feel the flavors that come out. Is it sweet? Is it sour? Maybe there are other complex flavors. As you start swallowing it, pay attention to the sensations that you feel. Do you feel satisfied? Maybe you feel that you want to eat another piece of fruit. This concludes our meditation. Please be sure to visit our website at joyofmedicine.org, where we have many more materials on wellness.